Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Hey, everybody. I got a bummer today, you know, as usual, because we're talking about Ukraine. Oh, do I have to think about that again, Al? Can't you just do one on everything closing in on Trump? That's my happy place, Al. Yes, and I will start with that because it's my happy place, too. He's going down. I really believe it. Key development this week, of course, the DOJ is clearly taking a very intensive look at Donald Trump's criminal culpability in its active investigation into the January 6th insurrection. And, you know, I've said all along that Trump is without a doubt guilty, beginning with the audio with Raffensperger. All I want is to find 11,780 votes. And if you don't do that, it's very dangerous for you, which I thought was so stupid on so many counts. First, just the idea that Raffensperger would actually do that. Can you imagine that press conference? I'm Brad Raffensperger, Georgia Secretary of State, and we have a new count in the presidential election here in Georgia. The winner by one vote is Donald Trump. So I'll get to that in a second. But my guest today is Julia Yaffe, Russian-born journalist who has written about international affairs for The New York Times, The Atlantic, The New Yorker, known for her trenchant writing about the culture and politics of Russia. And since the beginning of the war in Ukraine, her newsletter Puck has become a must-read. And we talked about where things are in this horrific war. And the headline is that this is not ending anytime soon because both sides think it's in their advantage to keep fighting. But first, Trump. How about the January 6th committee hearings? I love, love, love how your Tucker Carlson, your Sean Hannity, your Laura Ingraham have been saying, why are they even doing this? What a waste of time. Don't watch it. Please don't watch it. It's nothing here. Holy crap. These things have been great.
I was in the vicinity of a conversation where I overheard the president say something to the effect of, you know, I don't effing care that they have weapons. They're not here to hurt me. Take the effing mags away.
They're not going to hurt me. Then who are they going to hurt?
Take the effing mags away. Then they can march to the Capitol.
Oh, yeah. The people at the Capitol. Well, maybe he wasn't convinced that folks going to the Capitol in body armor with bear spray, spears, brass knuckles, pistols, and AR-15s were going to be violent. So, just in case, he sent out a text. Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done. And Bill Barr and everyone else with any credibility told Trump that he had lost the election. So he went to nutcase Rudy Giuliani, who told the Republican Arizona Speaker of the House, we don't have evidence, we have theories. And I think inevitably the case against Trump is so open and shut that they will have to try him and he will be convicted and then there will be violence. Because Malcolm Nance laid it out a few podcasts ago in his book, They Want to Kill Americans. So that's the good news. So let's turn to the bad news. Julia Yaffe joins me today. A real bummer. You know, as usual. The best way to learn a language? Immersion. living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life conversation in German. For example, let's say you wanted to order soup with your dinner. Die Suppe würde mir auch gefallen. That means the soup. That means I would also like the soup. And that way, I get soup with dinner. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/franken. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/franken, spelled babbel.com/franken. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
Now, you were born in Russia.
Yep.
And you left when you were seven years old?
That's it.
You know, I've heard this theory about this, which is, you know how Henry Kissinger, I don't know how old he was when he moved to the United States, but, you know, he has the accent. Mm-hmm. And I heard this theory, and I don't know if you've ever heard this, that if you emigrate to the United States before puberty.
That's it. Yep.
Is that it?
Yeah. This is, I've read this too, that this is like that your brain changes the way it acquires language at puberty. And that before puberty, you're still kind of a sponge and your brain learns language basically osmotically, right? And after puberty, you have to learn rules and grammar, and people have accents if they learn a new language after puberty. So for example, in my family, my cousins, for example, immigrated 2 years after us. So I was seven. I don't think I have an accent, although some people, when I say, oh yeah, I was born in Russia, some people will immediately say, oh yeah, I do detect an accent. I'm like, no, you don't.
No, you don't.
You don't detect a fucking accent. Shut up.
Yeah, the way you say fucking is just like it.
But my cousins arrived 2 years later, and my younger cousin was 9, and my older cousin was 12 and had already started puberty. And she has an accent, but my younger cousin does not. And they arrived at the exact same time. So QED.
Wow. There's proof. There it is. Okay, well, you have no accent. So I want to talk mainly about Ukraine today, because I think people, and you write about this, have a short attention span in this country and are concerned with a lot of other things. And people have stopped following it, and New York Times has stopped writing about it as much. Let's start with, where is it now? I mean, we've seen the Russians have gains in the east. Where is it? Tell me where we are.
Well, unfortunately, it's still there. The fighting is still happening. It seems to have kind of slowed down a bit. It seems like the Russians have hit pause, either because they're regrouping so that they can keep going, or because the HIMARS that the Ukrainian army now has, courtesy of U.S. taxpayers, are pounding Russian supply lines behind them.
These are kind of longer range missiles that we won't go into Russian territory, but we can go all the way to the edge of it, right?
Right.
And we can knock out their stuff. And
yeah, they're pretty powerful, and they're having quite an impact.
When did those arrive?
Ooh, you're putting me on the spot here. I don't know exactly, but quite recently. And they've already had this month, they've already had an impact. So the Russians have taken basically all of
the Luhansk region, which used to be home to a little nub called the Luhansk People's Republic, this so-called separatist republic, which was one of the two separatist republics that Vladimir Putin recognized back in February.
And Donbass.
Was the pretext. Yeah. And then there was the Donetsk People's Republic. And this was the pretext under which he invaded Ukraine on February 24th. He said that we're going to help these republics and we're going to liberate these republics in the areas that they have declared to be their area, which was the entirety of the Ukrainian Luhansk region and the Ukrainian Donetsk region. They've gotten most of Luhansk. They've gotten a big chunk of the Donetsk region, but not all of it. And they seem to have taken a break there. And then a little bit further south, we have the Kherson region, which was one of the first to fall in the war and was seen as a kind of very pro-Russian region. The Ukrainians are making some gains in a counteroffensive there. So that's kind of what's happening on the battlefield. And then you have Russians shelling cities like Mykolaiv, like Vinnytsia, like Kharkiv, killing civilians.
How many civilians have the Russians killed?
We don't know. There's not a reliable count, but probably tens of thousands at this point. Mm-hmm. It's horrific. And, you know, a friend of mine was just in Odessa reporting, and she said it's just like the sense there is absolutely terrifying. You just don't know when a missile will fall from the sky and kill you. And I think that's kind of the point, this kind of sense of terror. This is why you've had the Ukrainians saying that the Russians should be labeled a state sponsor of terrorism because of this sense of terror that they are inflicting on the Ukrainian civilian population, right? This sense of randomness that death will kind of just fall from the sky on you randomly and you can't predict it. Yep. You can't prevent it. You can't run. You can't hide. It will just come for you randomly. And I think that's very terrifying for Ukrainians there. But, you know, you look at Kyiv, life seems to be returning to normal as much as it can. People are starting to go out again, even though parts of Kyiv will randomly come under shelling. People are trying to live their lives.
Why haven't they hit where Zelensky holds court? And why haven't they hit that? Is that deliberate? I mean, they can target this stuff, right?
Maybe, maybe not. They haven't been very good at targeting stuff. They keep missing. They're not very good. I mean, I think one of the biggest lessons we've learned from this is that the Russians aren't very good. And we've learned this. This is the lesson I want to keep accentuating for Americans over the last 10 years. A lot of Americans are becoming more and more scared of Russia and the Russian government, which fair. But, you know, the evil that we see coming out of the Kremlin is often mitigated by incompetence and stupidity. They're just not very good at what they do. You know, like they sent in some goons with Novichok into...
They're pretty good at hacking us.
Yeah, but like, it took them two groups. They kind of got in each other's way. They broke a bunch of stuff along the way. Like they didn't do a very good job of it.
The 16 election, I think this is Putin's court.
I think they were able to use it well, but if you look at the actual hack itself, it was a total mess operationally. Like what they're doing is really bad shit, but they often trip over themselves. So like they sent two goons into Salisbury, England to kill this former FSB agent, Sergei Skripal, and they didn't kill him. They killed a random British woman by accident. Right. They poisoned him. They nearly killed him, but they didn't get the job done. I mean, they've destroyed a good chunk of Ukraine. They've killed tens of thousands of Ukrainian civilians and soldiers.
Well, that's just evil.
Yeah, right. Like it's horrible. Yeah. No, it is evil. I'm not saying that it's not. They do a lot of damage and a lot of harm, but there is also a lot of incompetence and stupidity wrapped up in it. And that is to your question of why they haven't hit the presidential, you know, administration is, one possibility is that they can't.
Okay. I know that they've had very accurate missiles, some. And anyway.
Something like a third of their missiles haven't exploded.
no one is arguing that this is an amazingly effective army.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Ted Cruz, remember, always criticized us for like having women in the fighting or in the military and the infantry and all that kind of stuff. And we weren't as masculine as the Russian army. And boy, oh boy. Anyway, the point is that our military is a lot better than Russia's. I'll tell you that. So you've written a piece about how the Europeans are really worried about these midterms and our commitment to this. And if that the Republicans win the House, that the support, the military support, the spending that we do on this, because we've how much have we spent supporting Ukraine in this war?
I think we've spent, I've lost count, but we had that $40 billion bill that passed. We've only shelled out a part of that. It's been tens of billions of dollars already, I think, from December on.
And you're hearing some grumbling from some Republicans in the
House. You're also hearing it from the left. You know, you're hearing it both from the left and the right that, you know, it's the classic isolationist argument, which is, I personally think, is a kind of logical fallacy, which is, you know, why spend money helping some country way over there fight their war when we have, you know, a baby formula shortage here, or we have, you know, why build roads somewhere else when we could be building roads here? And on one hand, I get it. It's a hard argument to make concisely.
Remember the Marshall Plan?
Exactly.
And that was a really good idea.
It was. But you know what? So I was just at a conference commemorating it. And somebody at the conference said that at the time, it was 5%. Of America's GDP. And I just thought, holy shit, 5%. Can you imagine that happening now?
Well, we should be spending something like that on climate, and we should be.
Yeah,
no way. The point is, if we don't support Ukraine, and you write about this, that Putin ain't going to stop. And there are a number of people, including Kissinger, who have said that we should negotiate some kind of settlement. And I think the operative word is we, as opposed to Ukraine, negotiating this. You know, I'm totally myself against that. I think that if and you write this, I'll let you make the argument.
Look, I think that if, in general, if you don't spend a little bit, even if it feels like a lot of money now, if you don't spend it now to solve the problem now, it will be a bigger, more expensive problem later. And I think we've seen this with Ukraine, for example. We didn't stop it back in 2014. And it's something that Ukrainians are scolding us for, I think very accurately, that we should have given them all these weapons back then in 2014 so that they could have pushed Russia out of the Donbas definitively. Or out of Crimea definitively.
And that was on Obama's watch.
Look, I think what a lot of Democrats don't want to acknowledge is that there was a lot more continuity in America's foreign policy from Obama to Donald Trump than we want to admit, in terms of kind of America turning inward and withdrawing and, you know, quote unquote, not being the world's policeman, which I get it. Look, like we pay in America, we pay a lot of taxes. I pay a shit ton of taxes and I don't seem to get a lot for it. And I remember a meme going around like the first week of the war in Ukraine. And it was like, American jets lined up on a tarmac and it said, you know, in those meme letters, it said, Russia's about to find out. And at the bottom, it said, why Americans don't have healthcare. You know, I get it. I get the frustration. If we don't play the world's policeman, there are other countries who do want to play the world's policeman, and they are Russia and China. And if we think that if America stops playing the world's policeman, everything will just be hunky-dory and the world will be peaceful and there will be no conflict because these people think that all conflict is caused by America, like they have big surprise coming for them.
Of course, this was a natural reaction to Iraq and Afghanistan, especially Iraq. And
of course, so, but there are things that precede Iraq, right? I think Vietnam. What happens in Vietnam, but also World War II and the Cold War and the occupation of half of Europe by the Soviet Union and World War I and a big complicated history. And what I'm saying is that
I'm with you, by the way.
Yeah. No, I get it. I just think that like what our disadvantage politically, and it's not one that Russia and China have, is that our memory cache seems to clean itself out like once a decade. And our memory of foreign policy seems to start in 2003 now, whereas it doesn't for Russia and China. They have a much longer term view, both forward and backwards.
I want you to make the argument against our negotiating a settlement here, you know, on behalf of Ukraine, but not Ukraine doing it. You know, basically what you say is that'll just encourage Putin and they'll just keep going because he doesn't actually abide by any agreements anyway.
Yes, there's that. But also I think it's not, you can't force two sides to make an agreement if neither side wants to negotiate. I think neither the Ukrainians nor the Russians are ready to stop fighting and ready to negotiate. I think both sides think that they can get more out of fighting, that they can get more on the battlefield and improve their position on the battlefield going into negotiations, right? Because whatever they negotiate is going to be influenced by what things look like on the battlefield. And I think they still think that things are fluid enough there that they're not ready to stop fighting and sit down and negotiate. And both Kyiv and Moscow have said as much openly. I also think that, you know, Ukraine is fighting for its very independence. Like Russia's not fighting for territory. Russia is fighting to dismantle Ukraine as an idea, as a concept, as a country. And they have been very, very open about that fact. Mm-hmm. Putin mm-hmm. does not believe Ukraine is a real country. He doesn't believe it should exist. Just the other day, we've seen reports that there are parts of the Russian army that now are wearing patches on their uniforms that say "Onward to Kyiv." They're not done, and they're not going to stop in the Donbas. So I don't think we're ready for a settlement because the two sides aren't ready for a settlement, and because the Ukrainians are fighting for their very existence, I think we should kind of follow their lead on that, if that makes sense, because it's existential for them. And then, as we just saw with like this weekend, on Friday, Russia signed on to an agreement agreeing not to bomb the infrastructure in Ukrainian ports that would be involved in exporting grain and fertilizer and other agricultural products that would alleviate this agricultural food crisis that the war has created, that Russia created by invading Europe's breadbasket.
Right.
And then less than 24 hours later, they bombed Odessa, which is the biggest port and the biggest port that would be involved in exporting this grain. And then, you know, and then they argued a technicality and said, well, actually, we bombed a military object there and not a grain related object there. But it's like, okay, sure. But how safe are people going to feel, you know, moving grain in and out of a port that where you're going to be, given your accuracy issues if you're bombing this port? And to me, it just showed, it was just such a big fuck you, honestly. It was such a big fuck you. It was like, we're Russia. We can do whatever the fuck we want. Yeah, we signed an agreement, but we don't really think it's worth much or the paper it was written on. Because, and that's what Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister, said. He's like, nothing in the agreement stops us from waging our special operation. And basically, fuck you. And that's what it means to negotiate with somebody like him. You know, I was just at the Aspen Security Forum last week, and I was talking to my old friend and former boss and mentor, Susan Glasser, who has also been a Russia watcher for a long time. She and her husband, Peter Baker, were based in Moscow for the Washington Post from 2000 to 2005. And Susan made an amazing point. She was like, look, I've been racking my brain, and I've been thinking back to 1999 when Putin came into office, and I've been trying to think of a single time that Putin took an off-ramp and de-escalated. And I cannot think of a single time, because every single time there was an off-ramp, he just floored it past the exit. And I don't know how you negotiate with somebody like that.
And, you know, I've sort of been hoping that one day we'll find out that, you know, one of the generals came in and shot him or something. But I guess.
Well, can I put a bullet in that theory? I'm so sorry. But the problem with this war is that, well, one of there are so many problems with this war. But one of the problems is that having started it, Putin created a faction that maybe didn't exist before, because people, I think, even in the army didn't know that the war was going to happen. Like, a few people knew that this war was going to happen, and they were very close to Putin. And then he gave the orders to a shocked military that then carried them out. But now that it's 6 months in, there is a very strong contingent, both in the military and in the, you know, security services like the GRU and the FSB, who think, having started it, we should just fucking finish it. And we shouldn't dilly-dally and wear kid gloves. We should level Kyiv. We should go all out and finish the thing, and not play nice with the Ukrainians, because that's how they see what's happening there, and just finish it off quickly and get it done. You have members of the military openly, and you have Ramzan Kadyrov, the head of Chechnya, who's a terrifying dude who heads some of the most scariest, most heavily armed people inside Russia who are now fighting in Ukraine. Some really powerful, scary, heavily armed people are openly arguing with Putin and saying, why are we
dilly-dallying,
dragging our feet? Yeah, why are we dragging our feet? So he's created a contingent of people who actually make him look like the moderate. And again, having just come back from this conference, you know, I had an opportunity to speak to people there, and I was speaking on the sidelines with the head of Estonian intelligence. I was asking him about this and about who, you know, a potential successor to Putin is. And his response was basically this. He kind of said my fear back to me, which was that there is now a party of war and Putin has become kind of the moderating force, and that whoever comes after him would probably be even more hawkish and even crazier and even more aggressive than Putin.
You're listening to the Al Franken podcast, which always cheers up my listeners. Hey, that's a big oi. Yeah.
Don't start wars. That's the problem. It's like, once they start, all kinds of unintended consequences follow.
Why didn't you say that to Putin, Julia?
I said it publicly for a long time.
Don't start
yeah,
wars.
Yeah, I did try to send him a singing telegram that said, make love, not war, but he didn't accept.
Oh. So the Europeans are really worried about these midterms, right?
That's right. Look, we've been yo-yoing back and forth basically for the last 20 years, going from administration to administration in a way that America hadn't before. Foreign policy was never fully bipartisan, but there was much more of a middle ground consensus before, I think, Iraq. And so this kind of yo-yoing has given, especially after 2016 with Trump, has given the Europeans a lot of whiplash and has really undermined their trust in us and their faith in us. And they don't know now that, you know, they're like, great, Biden's great. And we trust him and the people around him. And they're all professionals who are sane and know what they're talking about. But we don't know who's coming in the midterms and who's going to run Congress, and if it's going to be a bunch of MAGA yo-yos who are not going to want to fund Ukraine, who are going to try kneecapping NATO again. And if in 2024, either Trump wins or somebody like Trump wins and starts not just kneecapping NATO, but playing footsie with Putin and says, you know what? Let's force Ukraine into a settlement. Let's force Ukraine to give up territory. You know, basically taking the Tucker Carlson line, which is Ukraine is a corrupt fascist regime and our natural ally is Russia because they're white and Christian and we like big powers. So, you know, why are we supporting the Ukrainians anyway? And that would leave Europe kind of sandwiched between fascists on both sides. So they're really nervous. They know that, like, they have this little pause right now They don't know what's coming next. And they're realizing that they have to rely more on themselves and that they can't really count on us.
You know, Tucker said that thing about Democrats say we should hate Putin. But why? I mean, he hasn't called me a racist. He hasn't sent our middle class jobs to Russia. He hasn't tried to cancel Christmas. And you know what? Tucker's right. Putin hasn't done any of that stuff. And yet, I just hate Tucker. Anyway. okay. So let's hope we win the midterm. That's my message to the listeners. Do everything we can to win these midterms. But and the Europeans have a right to be very nervous about us. And yeah. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Julia Yaffe.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
So, you written a piece about Brittany Griner recently, right? So again, you know Russia. In the piece, you're saying that they just. They have zero tolerance on drugs, and but also they have almost 0% acquitting anyone of anything, right?
Correct. You'll be surprised to know that there's not much justice in the Russian justice system. It's shocking, I know, but I mean, basically, once an arrest is made, you're basically guaranteed to be found guilty of whatever it is you're charged with. And that's because it's still kind of a Soviet system where everybody has to have good numbers and meet their quotas. And if, you know, everybody touches the case, like the cop who makes the arrest and the detectives who investigate it and the prosecutor who charges and tries it. And then if the judge swoops in and acquits or finds the person not guilty, then it makes everybody else down the chain look like an asshole and messes up their numbers, whereas they're kind of all working together. There's this idea that they should all work together and keep their numbers up. So yeah, it's not about looking at the facts, as it were. Brittany Griner is actually kind of lucky. You know, today she testified. Her lawyers have been allowed to introduce evidence and call witnesses. 10 years ago, I covered the Pussy Riot trial. They weren't allowed to call a single witness in their own defense. So Brittany has it pretty good.
Now, the message here to, again, to my listeners is if you're traveling to Russia, you know, don't forget, just check your luggage. Don't forget something in it that could get you there in prison for 17 years in Russia.
Here's the thing. As somebody who travels a lot, as somebody who has spent time living in and traveling to Russia, I know that as an American, and I lived there at the height of the reset, when things were, Moscow and Washington were really trying to work together and have a good relationship. But even then, I was aware that as an American, as a journalist, I had to be super careful to not give the Russians ammunition. And that it was a zero tolerance drug country, and that there were Americans in Russian jails doing a lot of time for drugs, and there wasn't a whole lot that the American embassy can do for them. And in general, I think a lot of this uproar over Brittany Griner is like, there's an aspect to it that it feels very American. That's like, as if all Americans traveling anywhere in the world should have diplomatic immunity, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, that if you go to another country and you break the law, but if you're an American celebrity, the American government should just do everything and give up anything necessary to get you out of jail.
That's my position, by the way.
I think it's kind of strange. But on the other hand, I do feel awful for Brittany Griner. She was arrested a week before the invasion. And now there is not just a bad relationship. There is no relationship between Washington and Moscow. She is an American, which makes her extremely vulnerable to violence in prison, to discrimination. She is Black. She is gay. She is tall as shit. No matter what happens, she's going to be found guilty. Even if a deal is struck, she is going to serve some of her sentence. And she sticks out. The Russian penal system is horrific. It is horrific. It is still some of the same prisons, some of the same penal colonies that made up the Gulag, and they have been updated just a little bit. And to be an American who is 25 feet tall and Black and gay in that situation, who, by the way, does not speak Russian and cannot navigate the system, it just sounds like an absolute waking nightmare, and I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
Now, by the way, she plays in a league in Russia, right?
Yeah, but she doesn't speak Russian. Yeah.
No, I know that. But what I'm saying is people have to understand why she's there, right? She's there because they pay women athletes more in Russia to play.
Well, yeah, she made three times as much playing in Yekaterinburg, in Siberia, than she did playing in Phoenix. And so when people say like, well, if it was LeBron, well, LeBron would have never had to go to Siberia to play. And also, if it were LeBron, LeBron would never get out because the Russians would be like, great, we have LeBron. Can we have Alaska, please?
Jesus. Okay, well, that's hopefully they're going to do some kind of exchange and we'll give them an actual spy and we'll get her. But you're saying they'll give her some time. They'll make her stay there and do time before that happens. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, she'll probably have to serve some of her sentence by the time a deal is reached. But from what I've heard, they're in no mood to reach a deal, the Russians.
Man, oh, man. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's sad and sick.
And also, look, here's the other problem. Americans... And again, this will come as a surprise to you and your listeners, but Americans really don't understand Russia. And they're like, why isn't more being done? And why isn't more being said? And we should all be like, you know, ringing the alarm and screaming about Brittany Griner. Well, guess what? The more you do that, the more it raises her value and the more Russia can ask for in return for her freedom. And so the more you make her a cause celeb, the more Russia can say like, you know what? We don't want Victor Boot. We want you to ease sanctions. And what does the Biden White House say to that?
This is why Trump and Putin were friends.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think maybe actually in this case, Trump might have had better luck in getting Griner out. Remember the ASAP Rocky case? He loved this kind of stuff.
No, I don't remember that. What?
ASAP Rocky, the rapper who got arrested for, I think, for brawling in Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
And it became a whole thing. And his fans were like, why isn't the U.S. government doing more to get him out? He's in a Swedish prison, which I imagine was like...
That much IKEA. Better than... Yeah.
Yeah. yeah, much better than a Russian prison. And Trump... I mean, obviously, it's much easier to make a deal with Sweden than with Russia, just a little bit. But he loves celebrities. B, he loves making these kinds of deals. And he made a big thing out of it. he doesn't love black people, as we know, but he made a big, big to-do out of the swap. So I don't know.
That was one of the big to-dos that I missed, because there are so many big to-dos, like three every day.
Only three every day. It was like three an hour.
Yeah. Which is why you can't remember any of them. I mean,
correct. Remember the time he tried to buy Greenland?
I do. That I remember.
That was a good one.
You looked at a map and it was very big.
Yeah. And green.
Yeah. Well, Ron Johnson, don't get Ron Johnson started on that. That's he's proved that the planet hasn't warmed because Greenland evidently was green, you see. And now it's almost all covered with ice. So therefore, don't get me started. Okay. So Jesus Christ, this is, I'm a little depressed about this, but, I can't, I mean, this is so horrific.
I mean, if you want to talk, it's never good news with Russia. This is the thing. And then people are like, why are you so depressing? And I'm like, I'm just telling you what's it's just the nature of the subject. They're just, it's not a good time.
Well, let's cheer us up. How's China doing? How are we doing with China?
They're pretty mad.
What are they so mad about now?
Oh,
Have we accused them of genocide? Are they mad at that?
They're mad at that. They're mad that Biden Beetlejuiced the kind of one China policy that he said that the U.S. would come to Taiwan's aid militarily if China attacked. They're pretty mad about that. They're mad that Nancy Pelosi is thinking of visiting Taiwan. And today we just got news that the Pentagon is updating some military plans and putting the military on alert in case Pelosi does go visit Taiwan and it kicks some stuff off. So that's good. Yeah, I mean, things are not looking good. The people I talk to are telling me that things are good in the sense that because the war in Ukraine has kind of put some time on the clock vis-a-vis Taiwan and China. Like that they were going to make a move earlier, but now they're seeing how badly things are going for Russia in Ukraine, and they're kind of recalculating a little bit.
What a nightmare. What do we do if they just invade Taiwan? What does that look like? What is their making that decision look like? What does it look like?
Well, the thing is that we don't know, and that there are many things they can do short of actually invading it. And invading it would actually be quite difficult because it would involve, because it's an island that's quite mountainous, and that's very hard to invade because amphibious landings are really hard to do. But also resupplying an island that's under attack would be very hard to do for us.
For us.
The other thing is, would it be what would happen with the U.S.? Because would China attack U.S. bases that would be involved in resupplying Taiwan, you know, kind of Pearl Harbor style? So, but that is like the most extreme, I think, side of things. I think there's a number of options available to China short of that, including cyber, including other less scary options in trying to bring Taiwan to heel. They've been talking, you know, again, at this at the Aspen Security Forum, the Chinese ambassador to the U.S. scared the shit out of everybody because he was like, yep, we are going to reunify China very soon. But don't worry, it's going to be peaceful. And the U.S. are the ones putting all this Cold War talk out into the ether. And we're trying to be peaceful, but if you guys want to go, we'll go, and we're going to reunify China.
Oh boy. You know, people sometimes ask me like, hey, you know, have you thought of running for president? My response kind of is, well, problem is if I won, I'd have to be president.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I would say if you want to be president, I'd wait till after the nuclear holocaust because there'd be just fewer people to rule and just logistically less complicated.
Yeah, but it would be sad.
And your skin might be peeling off, so that's hard.
Yeah, okay. And taking your advice, waiting till after.
Okay. Yeah, but anyway, back to the fun stuff. The problem is that both, like, China's clearly itching for a fight with the US and, you know, really wants to kind of have it out and settle this shit once and for all. Russia has, from the very beginning of the war in Ukraine, has been very clear that they're not really fighting Ukraine in Ukraine, even though they're also saying they're fighting Ukraine because it's not really Ukraine, that they're fighting the US and NATO in Ukraine, which is like, poor Ukraine. Why don't you bomb NATO? Why are you bombing Ukraine, which is not in NATO? Anyway, like, both these two giant nuclear powers are just itching for a confrontation with a military confrontation with the US. And I don't know. I like how much longer does that gun stay on the, you know, mantelpiece in Act One without going off? It's a Chekhov reference.
Julia, it's been a pleasure.
I'm so sorry.
Okay. Any good news? Any good news internationally or maybe in your family? Do you have some good news? Any friends doing something interesting? Something good happened to them? Anything? Just anything.
I'm doing great.
Oh, good. Have you been watching Better Call Saul, the end of that?
No.
Oh, that's really good. No. You should watch that.
I should, yeah.
That's a good news thing. Those episodes are really good.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, thanks. And thanks for all the work you do and all the great writing you do and reporting. And I really value your stuff. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.